No sunshine for housing prices.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to the Morning Open, our look at business and the economy as Wall Street begins its trading day. Quite a day so far. Coming up, how do you want to look at this morning's news on home prices? A little higher than a year ago, but lower than 3 months ago. We'll take our look in just a moment. First, where is Wall Street? Dow Jones Industrial Average, well below 10,000 now, down 217 points. It's at 9,849. And the NASDAQ, S&P 500, both down more than 2%. And it's the same thing across the oceans today, with stocks down 2 to 3% in Asia and Europe. Okay, our regular Tuesday commentator, Julie Neiman, is an analyst at Smith Moore & Company, and she joins us on Tuesdays live from St. Louis. Hi, Julie.
Morning, Bill.
We will talk stocks in a moment, but in the last hour, we got this private report, the S&P Case-Shiller Index of home prices. It shows U.S. prices up 2% from a year ago, but Julie, you are our Tuesday pessimist, and I have a feeling you're going to focus on the fact that in the last 3 months, prices fell a little.
And behind that news, housing prices declined 3% in March. Bottom line is, we're just resuming the trend. It was artificially held up because of the $8,000 credit that we've had over the last 9 months, a real positive thing that kept the housing market from getting worse. But the trend is still down here. In fact, the famous Robert Shiller thinks that possibly it's a 10% drop further ahead here.
Well, here's what I want to know, Julie. Is this just bad news for somebody trying to sell a house, good news for somebody trying to buy a house, or do you think we're seeing a gathering economic storm again with home prices, European debt, and, as I said, tumbling stock markets?
Well, it is a positive for anybody who wants to buy a house, but the problem is the biggest asset price is continuing to decline. Now, where does this whole economy turn? We're getting lower oil prices, lower mortgage prices, lower housing prices, everyday low prices all across the nation here, but nobody is out there buying, and that's not going to happen until companies start hiring. They're not doing that yet. They want to see real demand for goods and services here. They've got plenty of cash, good financial condition. They're simply not ready to hire in a real definitive way yet.
Everyday low prices. Julie Neiman with Smith Moore & Company, thank you.
You bet.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, May 25th at Marketplace.org. The government has been getting tougher on insurance companies in the last few months, denying them the big rate increases they are accustomed to. Well, now insurers are vowing to get tough on hospitals. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Gregory Warner reports.
10 years ago in Boston, insurance companies learned a hard lesson. When the insurance company Tufts Health Plan refused to pay the larger reimbursements that a group of popular hospitals were demanding, the hospitals responded by refusing to take Tufts insurance anymore. A few days later, Tufts' CEO at the time, Harris Berman, got a call from his biggest customer.
General Electric, saying they really appreciated the fact that I was trying to hold the line on costs, but unless we got back to the table, they were going to have to switch insurers.
So Tufts crawled back and paid the hospital's price. Since then, hospital prices in the city have almost doubled. This year, Tufts and other insurance companies across the country say they won't back down during contract negotiations so quickly.
The tide is changing.
Colin Drozdowski is with the insurance giant Anthem Wellpoint. He says customers know more than they did a decade ago about rising health care costs. He says if hospitals try to freeze insurers out of the network, most customers will stick with their plans and change doctors rather than see their premiums keep climbing. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
The economy may or may not be on the mend, but don't even talk about recovery to owners of health clubs. Gym memberships are still down. There is one notable exception, though, to this trend. From New York, Raphael Cohen reports.
Right hand touches the far knee, right foot the left foot, step, drive, and go.
Brian Glick is teaching a takedown to some of his advanced jiu-jitsu students. He owns 4 Brazilian jiu-jitsu schools in Brooklyn. Altogether, he's got almost 1,000 students. He says he's found jiu-jitsu schools like his have thrived through the recession, and they're doing even better now that the economy is rebounding.
I spoke to another school owner, actually, who was in Florida, and people were asking him about the recession, and he said, we're not believing in it. You know, we don't really subscribe to that.
Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is on a tear. The U.S. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation says entries for its national championship went up 18% last year. Chris Fiumano's been studying at one of Glick's schools for a couple months.
You see this tiny, skinny, nothing guy who, if you saw walking down the street, you'd be like, oh, I could beat him up. But it's not true.
It's not just the promise of rock-hard biceps and iron fists that draws people like Fiumano into the gym. The sport has also been helped by one of the most popular spectacles on television, mixed martial arts, or as it's better known, Ultimate Fighting.
6'5", 265-pound, undefeated 11-0 Shane Carwin will have the chance to prove that UFC heavyweight champion Brock Lesnar has met his match.
Right foot to left foot drive!
Glick's schools don't train UFC fighters, but he says the sport's been great for his business.
There's definitely an uptick in participation in martial arts. And one of the reasons is because of stuff like the UFC, which is this incredible marketing machine that's bringing, you know, martial arts or MMA to literally millions of people at every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks.
It's almost free advertising for jiu-jitsu gyms like Glick's, driving fans and wannabe masters of the octagon into schools all over the country. In New York, I'm Raphael Cohen for Marketplace.
Today, a congressional committee is holding a hearing on how much companies ought to have to pay out during oil spills like the one in the Gulf of Mexico. Yet the administration is dealing with questions over why it hasn't pushed back harder against BP's cleanup. Marketplace's Janet Babin is with us live. Hi, Janet.
Good morning, Bill.
Janet, what will today's hearing get at?
Well, this is the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, and they're going to discuss whether to increase liability limits for companies involved in offshore drilling. Right now, the amount is capped at $75 million, and there are some bills floating around the House and the Senate that would increase that amount to $10 billion. And there's even a push to make that liability increase retroactive so that it would cover this current BP spill.
And what has been the reaction to raising the amount oil companies may have to pay?
Well, for its part, BP said it's going to ignore that $75 million cap anyway and pay all legitimate economic claims. Here's BP's chief operating officer, Doug Suttles.
We've spent about $800 million so far. We've paid approximately $30 million in claims to date, and most of those claims are for lost income.
Now, some Republicans are opposed to this liability increase. They say it would make it too expensive for smaller oil companies, effectively pushing them out of offshore drilling.
No, frustration seems to be growing over the Obama administration's reliance on BP to stop this leak. Janet, is there any move to shift strategy?
Bill, not at the moment. Yesterday, the Coast Guard official in charge said BP needs to lead the operation. He said the government just doesn't have the expertise or equipment to take over.
Marketplace's Janet Babin. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
The former president of Shell Oil has written a new book. It's called Why We Hate the Oil Companies. John Hofmeister, welcome to Marketplace.
Thank you for having me.
You have called for more offshore oil drilling, including deep water drilling. How does this BP spill affect your stand?
I think it risks it considerably. The reason for more offshore drilling is the fact that over the course of the next 10, 20, even 30 years, this nation's going to continue to rely upon domestically produced oil reserves. And if we somehow reduce offshore drilling because of the BP spill, we will be transferring additional hundreds of billions of dollars to foreign countries rather than developing jobs here in America.
What about the argument that we have to push ourselves away from the oil table or we just keep slurping?
I hear that argument and I agree with it in the fullness of time. And what do I mean by the fullness of time? Within 50 years, we will be using much, much less oil than we do today. And in the book, I call for the end of the internal combustion engine within the next 20 to 25 years.
As a former oil executive, what do you know about energy policy that you feel like Americans don't understand?
We have far more oil than the president is implying. I call that disinformation. That's wrong for elected officials to tell the American people something that's simply not true.
But aren't oil finds not only not a sure thing, but as we found out these last several weeks, very dangerous?
Well, there's another question that you could raise in this regard. Why are we in the deep water offshore to begin with, when we could be either in the shallow offshore, far less risky? We could be onshore on federal lands drilling for oil. There are huge, huge volumes of reserves to be developed, but these are all put off limits by public policy. And if I were to be cynical about it, I would say it's out of sight, out of mind, therefore nobody cares. Well, when there's a blowout, a lot of people care.
John Hofmeister is former president of Shell Oil and author of the new book, Why We Hate the Oil Companies. John, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And finally, the New York Times reports 51 New York bus drivers went on paid leave last year after being spit on by passengers. This increase in spittle attacks is affecting the transit budget, since those drenched drivers took an average of 64 days off work with pay. The Times article notes how they deal with similar offenders in London. Police there collect the spitter's DNA. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.